Awakening the Body and Mind with mindfulness teacher and physiotherapist Jessica Maguire. The gateways to inner freedom, peace, and happiness lie in awareness. We can awaken through the teachings of meditation, mindfulness, and compassion. Your power and your potential to grow lie in understanding your mind. Freedom from fear, stress, and doubt come from understanding thoughts and feelings. In the inevitable challenges of life, you can learn to rest your heart in what is true.
Hello and welcome to Awakening the Body and Mind podcast. I'm Jessica Maguire, a mindfulness teacher, physiotherapist, and the co-founder of Coming Home to Your Body Retreats. This podcast will be arranged around the teachings I learned when I took a study sabbatical in 2017. Throughout my studies, I immersed myself in in-depth mindfulness training, modern neuroscience, psychology, self-compassion training, somatics, ancient wisdom, Eastern philosophy, and spirituality. In the inevitable challenges of life and when suffering great loss, there will be teachings and practices here to help guide you home to a place where you can rest your heart in what is true. I'll be interviewing some of the best teachers of spirituality and awakening, from Buddhist monks through to thought leaders. May this be a place that you return to again and again. May it provide mind training that helps you. May it provide inspiration from hearing other people's stories and the way that that connects us. And may it help you to recenter and come home to yourself. Please feel free to also visit my website, jessicamaguire.com.
Lane Beachley is regarded as the most successful female surfer in history. She's the only surfer, male or female, to claim 6 consecutive world titles. She then went on to win a 7th world title in 2006 before retiring from the world tour in 2008. Lane was inducted into both the Australian and US Surfing Halls of Fame in 2006 and the Sport Australia Hall of Fame in 2011. At the 2015 Australia Day Honours, Lane was appointed an Officer of the Order of Australia for distinguished service to the community through support for a range of charitable organisations, as a mentor for women in sport, and to surfing as a world champion competitor. Yet there's so much more to Lane's story than just surfing. Lane Beachley was born Tanya Gardner on 24th of May 1972 in Sydney. Her mother was only 17 years old and unmarried, so she was soon adopted by Neil and Valerie Beachley. When Lane was just 6 years old, Valerie suffered a post-operative brain hemorrhage and died. She left Lane and her brother to be raised by Neil. Lane met her biological mother for the first time in 1999. Lane has spoken openly about her struggles from the traumatic events of her childhood and the grief that she went through, as well as the effect that this had on her as an adult. Throughout the podcast, we chat about how she healed this unresolved pain and suffering, and the pressure and expectations that she'd put on herself in order to feel lovable. We also talk about what practices she uses now to be the best version of herself she can be. Lane is incredibly motivating to listen to, yet she also shares profound wisdom and insight that only someone who has sat in their own darkness could share. I had the good fortune of meeting Lane in 2015 when my friend Tony Poposky and I co-founded the Women's Triathlon and Fun Run in Tasmania. Lane was the speaker at our motivational dinner, and she even provided a beach training session for some of the ladies who were participating. The triathlon is on again in November this year, and I'll pop a link in the notes below if you might be interested in taking part this year. So, without any further ado, I bring you the incredible Lane Beachley. Welcome to the podcast, Lane.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you on, and there's many, many questions that I have because there's a lot I know I could learn from you. But I'd love to start out by hearing about your personal journey, particularly the mental challenges that you faced from what I read about in your book, Beneath the Waves. Mm-hmm. It says in there about you hit some difficult times, particularly around the time when you walked away from your sponsor. I think often we look at successful athletes and think that it's all easy and they just, you know, it all falls into place and success just comes. But I know that wasn't the case for you. And there was one particular journal entry that you wrote that's in the book, and it said, "I don't understand why I feel so helplessly unhappy when I have a wonderful life, a loving boyfriend, thousands of people who look up to me and draw inspiration from my achievements." What was going on for you at that stage, do you think, that led to you feeling so helplessly unhappy?
I was just focusing on what I was missing. I was focusing on what I didn't have or what I thought I was meant to have. Basically, I was spending my attention focusing on the negative and not really being grounded in any gratitude or positivity. And that energy that was flowing towards being titled as being a loose cannon and self-promoting and disrespectful and ungrateful. All I did was start focusing my energy on all of those things. And like I said in my diary entry, I don't understand why I'm feeling this way because there's so many things in my life to be grateful for, but I certainly wasn't spending any attention or spending any time focusing on the things that I know I could easily be grateful for.
So that would have taken a lot of courage to walk away from your sponsor. How did you find the courage to walk away without knowing, you know, without having another sponsor secured, but knowing deep down that this was what you was right for you? How did you come about that courage?
Well, it took some time. I mean, I was with them for 8 years and I won 6 consecutive world titles under their brand. So I was very committed to building that brand and of course, building my own image around the world. And I thought it was a really mutual beneficial relationship. But I just got to a point where I was dissatisfied. I was restless. I wasn't happy because I felt like I was compromising my own values. And one of those values is authenticity. And I felt like a second-class citizen, the way they negotiated with me, the way they treated me. I didn't feel respected or appreciated in the position that I was in. So I thought, you know, it's time to do something different. And you know, the only sign of life is growth. And I just stopped growing within that that relationship, just like any relationship. And so I proposed to do something different. I proposed to build a brand under their brand. And the CEO in front of the whole board of directors just looked at me and said, I'd rather practice my golf game than help you build a clothing brand. And that was enough for me to say, well, we can just get tucked.
Good. Good for you.
Yeah, because I'm not one that would ever compromise my values. And that's why I was labeled to being this unpredictable loose cannon, because I didn't abide by everybody else's rules. I lived according to my own values and my own rules, and that upsets people. That annoys people, especially people who are used to having it all their own way, such as the surfing industry. So that's really what inspired me. And of course, there was no fallback plan. There was no plan of thinking, oh, well, I'll just build my own clothing brand, or I'll just go off and get another sponsor. And it was, you know, several months, maybe a couple of years later, when it took me a long time to get over it, because the moment I walked away from that brand, I was then ostracized by the rest of the surfing world. You know, I was always a bit of a renegade, always a pioneer. I was ahead of my game, ahead of the time. You know, I get all those terms, and I do feel that way. But at the time, it felt quite daunting because I'd left my family, per se. You know, like the industry, they want to make you feel like you belong. They want to make you feel like you're part of their family. So you're either part of the Billabong family or the Rip Curl family or the Roxy family. And the minute that you're ostracized from the family, you really no longer belong anywhere. And that was quite difficult for me. And that's where some of the depression and negative thoughts came in.
Understandably so. Had you had any episodes of depression before that incident?
Yes, I had. I had chronic fatigue back in the mid-90s, and that led to different states of depression, different levels of depression, suicidal tendencies, and just the black dog really started to burrow its way into my consciousness, which a couple of years later, when I fell in love with a big wave surfer, a guy called Ken Bradshaw, he labeled that negative force in my life as the worm. And the worm was something that would appear in different forms, and it's only people around you that love you and care for you and nurture you and that are honest with you that you really need to make sure that they're there in times when you're not willing to address your own needs. When you know you're restless, you know you're uncomfortable, you know you're unhappy, you know you're depressed, you know you're in a negative state, yet you're not willing to do anything about it. And it's amazing how comfortable we can become in our own discomfort. And that's when you need people around you that say, hey, I'm recognizing something. Because the only way to get past something is to first to recognize it and own it. And if you're not willing to own it, you're not willing to look at it, then you'll never get past it. And it will actually own you. It will define you. It will determine everything that you do in your life. And then you become a victim of circumstance. Then you become someone whose life is dictated to, and everything's happening to you as opposed to everything happening for you. And I was very fortunate that I had someone like Ken in my life at the time and went, hey, the worm's back in there. What's it saying to you? What's that internal dialogue saying to you? What does it sound like? Because I can see it being demonstrated in your habits, in your behaviors, in your actions. And so I can't, you know, you can't change what you can't see. So if you're in a state of restlessness, if you're in a state of depression, then you have to have the courage to look at it. And then you have to have someone around you to support you through it, because none of us go through and get through times of struggle and pain and suffering alone.
And it was interesting that in your book, after you and Ken were together, is that when your success grew? Do you think it was his support there for you emotionally and also being able to mirror back what was going on and what you were behaving like or what you were saying that really did lead to your success?
It certainly contributed to it at the time because, like you say, it was a matter of having that emotional support. You know, I've had plenty of support from my coaches over the years, but it was having that unconditional love and that safety and that sounding board in my life, because a lot of us are going through trauma, we don't ever feel safe enough to voice it or speak it. And that's when we start to suppress it and we put on these happy faces, these shop fronts, these demeanors and facades that you expect no one else to be able to see through. And then you start to believe in your own bullshit, and that's when it becomes toxic. So I'd believed in enough bullshit for many years to when Ken actually started calling me on it. And that's what I needed, that honesty, that integrity, that love and unconditional support that just gave me the safety to feel sad and also the sounding board to voice my concerns or my anger or my rage or whatever emotion that was coming up. It didn't matter whether it was a boyfriend or a family member or whatever. It was just making sure that I had that one particular connection with someone, because that's what helps you build your resilience. And so success is a result of action. Confidence is a result of action. Motivation is a result of action. But if you're not willing to take any action, then you'll stay exactly where you are.
And it was interesting because also I read then after that time you were injured. You injured your neck and you were forced to take time off from surfing and really go into looking at what had been maybe you hadn't quite been present with. Would that be fair? Or hadn't looked back at your past of what was there and needed healing. How did taking that time off from surfing when you got injured and what practices did you bring in that also nurtured you to heal, because you have not had a easy childhood either. You know, people think again with successful athletes that it's all just come easily for them, but your childhood had a lot of trauma in it and a lot of grief. So how did you go back and look through all that so you could then take those actions to go forward in life again?
Well, the first thing I did, like I said, was I recognized that I was tarnished goods. I accepted that. You know, we're all products of our environment, and sometimes we address our stuff, sometimes we don't. But I realized that there was a lot of unaddressed pain. So first I did was I recognized it. Second thing I did is I created the space to allow myself to do that. And then I started seeking support and assistance from experts that could help me through it. And then also I actually started journaling. I started writing down a lot of stuff just to allow it to get out. I mean, if you're not willing to feel, you've got to feel it to heal it, but if you're not willing to feel it, then writing it out is one way to start healing your past pain and suffering. I mean, Jimmy Barnes is a great example of that, and how much healing he's done just by writing his amazing books. And, you know, it would have taken a lot of courage to put that down and then share it with the world. But when you share your pain, when you share your suffering with the world, it gives people permission to feel it as well, and it actually heals you and it heals others. I knew that I had to feel it to heal it, so I gave myself as much time as it was going to take to heal it. And so I sought counsel from biosync therapists and Skinner therapists and Sanaki therapists and massage therapists, acupuncturists. I learnt meditation. I learnt NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. I did a lot of yoga, a lot of breathing. I went on a really strict diet, so I really took care of my nutrition. I basically nurtured myself for as long as it took for me to be able to get back in the water without feeling pain. And that doesn't mean just stop nurturing once you've got to where you need to go. You've got to maintain that consistency of love for self and care for self. And so that's what I learned a lot from that process, was not only making the time and the space, but then committing to the action.
I guess it's hard for us to give ourselves that permission to nurture ourselves. I imagine when you were at the top of your game, to take that time out probably wouldn't have come unless you got an injury where you were forced to stop.
That is correct, and that's my mentality. I'm an extremist. I don't listen until things are really severe, really, really blocked. That block becomes the problem, and it's actually not the block's not the problem. It's the resources that you've got to overcome the block, or your inaction, or your beliefs about the block that create the problem. The block is there just to provide a solution and provide you with the opportunity to stop and reflect. So sometimes we spend so much time laying blame on the block and accusing that of ruining our lives, that it's actually our resources or our approach to it that's actually the block itself. So it's not always the block's fault. So it was a matter of listening, learning to listen. And I thought, honestly, that I had learnt that lesson, especially from chronic fatigue and severe injuries and traumatic experiences throughout my life. But that was my biggest turning point as far as trusting in my ability to listen and learn and adapt before it gets to that point of destruction and pain and suffering. Like, I can start listening to the subtleties of the universal messages as opposed to waiting until I'm hit by a Mack truck.
So the wiser Lane Beachley sees, okay, it's time to slow down and pay attention to this rather than, yeah, I understand what you mean. And also in the book you talked about when you were injured and you fell off your bike, and this is the quote from the bike: I immediately went into that self-defeating, I'm an idiot, why did you do this, you're so f***ing useless. That was how you said, you know, yourself talking to yourself. How loud was your inner critic in the days where, like, prior to when you stopped, took the time out to nurture yourself? And this is one thing that I find really interesting. Did the inner critic make you more successful, or would you have been just as successful without being so critical of yourself before that point?
Yeah, the critic certainly was deafening, and there was times when I heard it loud and clear and actually bought into it. And then there was times where, fortunately, I had the energy and the clarity and the confidence to shut it up and just go, ha, you're funny, but that's not what I choose to buy into today. So, when I fell off the bike, I went, as I said in my book, I went straight back into what I knew, which is our default setting. And it's amazing when you challenge yourself to embrace a new way of thinking, a new way of acting, a new way of believing, new habits. The first thing you're going to encounter is resistance, and that resistance is literally a test from the universe to ask you, how committed are you to doing things differently? Are you going to be solid in your resolve to doing something differently, or are you just going to go back into those old habits and old patterns? Because it's our ego's job to say, I told you so. It's our ego's job to validate ourselves. So if we can embrace something new, like I had, and then all of a sudden, you throw yourself over the handlebars and you go face first into gravel, and the first thing you do is start telling yourself how much of a fool you are, then you have just bought back into the old beliefs and the old patterns, and that's your default setting. First thing I'm going to do is forgive myself for throwing myself over my handlebars, and now what have I got to do to repair my body?
Yes. Your poor old body. I reckon it's been in that way a few times, wouldn't it?
A few too many times, yes. It's still in repair. I do hammer my body, a poor little body. But I'm learning to actually take better care of it, you know, with nutrition. I do yoga classes at least twice a week. I still surf every day. And that's what I mean about creating the space to nurture yourself and care for yourself. And a lot of people out there that are struggling, there's a lot of either single parents out there putting kids through school, working three or four jobs just to keep food on the table, and that's a struggle. That's tough, you know. But you still owe it to yourself to create whatever space that you can create in your day to just nurture yourself, because if you keep flogging yourself, you're going to be no use to anybody, and that's what I learned. So even if it's 5 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever it takes for you to be able to create the space and then find something that nurtures you and committing to doing that, that will actually build you from the inside out.
Do you have a meditative practice, or is the yoga enough for you?
Yeah, surfing is a meditation practice for me. Yeah. Going out there, I don't speak to anybody the majority of the time in the water. It's very meditative. I like to colour in. I also have a whole bunch of different meditation apps on my phone. At the minute I get onto a plane, which is probably once or twice a week, I stick in my headphones and just do meditation on the takeoff. Usually puts me to sleep. And I start every day with a meditative practice, which is just a breathing practice. That just calms me down, because most of us start every day by opening our eyes and then feeling overwhelmed or telling ourselves we're tired.
How did you, or how have you learnt to separate your sense of self-worth from what it is that you achieve? Because I imagine as an athlete that would be a big challenge, to not see your value as what you do. And I know that, like, I see it in myself with work, like, it's how much can I get done? It's like wanting to prove something. How have you learnt to manage that?
Through being on the opposite side of the coin. So I learned how to manage it by feeling the extreme worthlessness of retirement and feeling like I'd lost every sense of identity, from the sense of belonging to the sense of structure, sense of family, sense of purpose, sense of direction. Once again, I acknowledged that I was in that state, because it took me several months to even recognize that I was feeling that way, and that I went to a footy game from our local Manly rugby league team, where there was a whole bunch of former athletes, you know, retired athletes and successful women in the community, and I told them, they asked me, how are you going? I went, not good. I feel lost. And they went, oh, that's normal. I went, oh, well, I wish I asked you 3 months ago. It would have saved me a lot of baking. And because that's what I was doing to fill my time. and so then once I realized it was normal, then I stopped judging it. I stopped feeling like I had to not feel that way. I stopped criticizing it and judging it, and just went, okay, so it's okay to feel this way. Now what am I going to do about it? Now I've got perspective. So what actions am I going to take next? So I then just talked to people about it. Fortunately for me, I still surf every day. So even though I've left my profession, I've still got to the recreational side of it. And I found other ways that physically challenged me. I did Dancing with the Stars. I did Sydney to Hobart Yacht Race. I competed in a couple of Masters World titles. I did the Mark Webber Adventure Challenge race. You know, for the first 5 or 6 years, I felt this need to go and invest myself into something that physically challenged me. Now I no longer feel that way. So it's a matter of the standards that you set, the expectations that you have, and a wise person has always told me that when you free yourself of expectations, you free yourself to live.
Oh, wow. I love that. That is so good.
Mm. Yeah.
And it leads into the next question, actually, which was actually going to be, what advice would you now give to your 30-year-old self, particularly in the times when you were struggling around the chronic fatigue, and also when you walked away from Billabong? As the wiser, more evolved Lane, what would you advise yourself, especially from when you were, you know, right in the midst of being the best in the world at surfing?
It's going to sound like real hippie, but love thyself. Just be more accepting of yourself. Be kinder and more compassionate to yourself. You just need to learn to love yourself. And unfortunately, we grow up in a time where, well, most of us, you know, recently, over the last 20 years, have grown up in a time where there's so much expectation, so much conflicting information, so many things telling you that you're not good enough, no matter how successful, how organized, how beautiful, how tall, how skinny, how talented, how smart, doesn't matter. You're just never going to be enough. And that's a toxic mindset to bring into the world. It's a toxic attitude to have to become successful and fulfill your potential in life. So just love who you are and how you are and what you are, and bring the best version of that into the world every day, because no one can expect more of you than you expect of yourself. And I must admit that I expected more of myself than was reasonable, and that's why I had so many troubles, so many traumas, so many disappointments, so many failures, so much sadness, so much anger, so much, just so much of the negative, because the expectations were just so severe and extreme that it was unrealistic.
And can you see that you were expecting so much of yourself because of what you suffered from through your childhood, with finding out you were adopted and trying to find that sense of love, do you think, through achievement?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so there's two emotions in life. There's love and there's fear. And if you're striving and driving yourself really hard to achieve without care, which is the way I did it, it stems from fear. And that was my 6 world titles. My 7th one, I wasn't striving or driven to achieve anything. The only thing I was doing that for was out of pure love and gratitude that now I can compete without pain, without expectation, without pressure, without fear. I'm just going to actually be grateful for the opportunity. So today, if I lose, I come in knowing I've done the best I can possibly do, and I won't fall into a blubbering heap of tears and shattered disappointment because I haven't fulfilled my own expectations of myself. So my 7th world title was one in a state of love, and that was the most successful and the most satisfying and most enjoyable world title I had of the 19 I had on tour and the 7 world titles that I won. I've learned a lot about my survival mode, which is in my state of fear, and my gratitude mode, which is in a state of love. And there's different things that happen in my life throughout a day that indicate to me what state I'm in. And it's a matter of tuning in and not tuning out. And so the thing is that sometimes we tune out of our own intuition because we're tuning into what everyone else is saying to us, whereas I choose to tune in first before I start listening to how other people are thinking and what other people are saying.
And how do you tune into yourself? What practices do you use? Is that like your journaling and like sort of meditation stuff, or is it when you're surfing? How do you tune into your intuition?
All of that and above. Yeah, all of that. I starts with the breathing exercise in the morning. It only takes a couple of minutes. And it starts by having a really big glass of water the minute I wake up, because our bodies and brains can be so dehydrated. It also involves doing other professional development style of courses, reading other books, hanging with people who challenge me, surfing every day. I mean, it's also, most importantly, it's just listening to my body, because I've hammered it so much over the 45 years I've been on this planet. I really start to listen to it. And there's this amazing book called You Can Heal Your Life, written by a tremendous and spiritual leader called Louise Hay. And basically what she says in that book is that every part of our body pertains to a different emotion. And so if you're experiencing pain and discomfort in different areas of your body, it pertains to something that you're not willing to look at, or actually something you do need to look at. It's a matter of looking at that first before you start going to a doctor and looking for medicine and a silver bullet to fix your problems, because it all comes down to your body actually communicating with you. And emotionally, physically, your body will distract you to prevent you from having to deal with the emotional component. So I believe in that, and I love that. So I'm always tuning into that sort of things as well.
Yes, and you've mentioned gratitude several times. I really like that, because that does definitely cultivate the state of love or abundance. Do you have a practice that you use around that, or is it just something that you bring in through the day to make a note of what you're grateful for?
Something I bring into the day. There are days where I forget to be grateful, and so it's a habitual thing you really need to practice. I used to start every day, actually, with after I breathe, I just do like this 2x breath, where I breathe in for 3 seconds, hold for 3, and then breathe out for 6, and then breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, breathe out for 8, and then breathe in for 5 seconds, hold for 5 seconds, and breathe out for 10. And that's a really grounding, centering exercise that you can start your day with. And you can do that as many times as you want. You can do 3x3s, 4x4s, and 5x5s, which is how I do it. And then before I open my eyes, I ask myself, what am I grateful for today? A lot of people don't have the time to do that in the morning. They got to get up, they got to get the kids to school, they got to get into peak hour traffic and get to work. So then it's a matter of finding a practice that works for you, whether it's sitting in public transport and asking yourself what. Just implementing those little practices brings a whole sense, like you say, it cultivates happiness, it cultivates centeredness, it actually eliminates distraction and dissolves a lot of negativity, grounds you in you. And that's actually the most important thing you need to focus on, is you.
Do you have a final message for our listeners around anything to do with, you know, what you've said or touched on today, but really about how we can each take care of ourselves in the best way possible and not going after success or not having to be about reaching potential or striving, but so we can be grounded and be the best version we can be, just as we are?
Yes, so being the best version that we can be means identifying what does the best version of you look like and feel like? How does the best version of you live? And what do you need to do to create that? Does it mean embracing a new habit? Does it mean drinking more water? Does it mean walking 10,000 steps? I mean, it's different for every one of us. And that's what I aspire to be every single day, is the best version of me. I also acknowledge that the best version of me some days is a pretty grumpy, upset, miserable person. And so that's okay. The biggest mistake that we make when we get into those days is that we suffer in silence. And that is the worst thing you can do. So what does the best version of you look and feel like? Then that's entirely up to you, and only you can define that. Then make sure you surround yourself with people that bring that out in you every day, bring out the best in you, that elevate you, support you, and nurture you. But they've also got to be communicated with in a way that you have to respect them as well. And then finally, you've got to commit to those actions every day. Not just, oh, I'm going to decide to be my best person today, and then tomorrow it can go just fall to pieces. Even if you're having a bad day, there's still got to be something that can make you feel good, even if you're having the worst day in the world. So, and that is as simple as identifying something that you can be grateful for. You know, I lost my mother. I was sitting in bed with her, watching her die from ovarian cancer at 62 years of age, and it was deeply distressing and disheartening. I'd only really reconciled our relationship as I was an adoptee, and this is my biological mother. And I must admit, I was deeply distressed and sad and distraught by the pain of losing her so soon. However, I reconciled that whole moment by saying, I'm just so grateful that I'm here to say goodbye. I'm so grateful that I'm here because I've had to fly from the other side of the world to hold her hand as she passes away. I'm grateful that I have this moment to say thank you. Thank you for giving me away, because, man, I got the best side of that straw for sure. And I'm just grateful that I have these 3 minutes to share this moment with her. And that's how I reconcile most sadness in my life, is finding something I can be grateful for within it.
Mm. And I love how you said first, though, it's still about giving it the space. So recognizing what's there, giving it the space so you can be sad. And then when you're ready, yes. I guess, cultivating the gratitude or the yes. what you think from that.
Yes, exactly. But the longer we take, the more pain and suffering we put ourselves through. So just don't take too long.
Exactly. One more question, and then I promise I will not take yep. up any more of your time. What are you working towards for yourself next? Like, do you have a goal or a vision, or are you just content with just being now, or, you know, like if you're not working towards something?
It's a very good question, because I'm not actually working towards anything. I'm working towards one thing, that's writing another book.
Oh,
I want to share more of my life lessons after surfing. I want to share with the world. So that's the one thing that's really on my agenda that I'm working towards. The rest of the time I'm just working on being the best version of me on a daily basis and living up to the standards at which I've set for myself. You know, I have standards, and also acknowledging that there's days when I'm feeling a little exhausted and worn out, and then making sure that I nurture and repair myself and surrounding myself with experts that help that along. And create space, you know, allow myself the time and space to do that. I don't have to be everything to everyone. I just have to be the best version of me to me.
Wonderful. Lane, thank you so much for taking the time out to chat with me and the wisdom that you've just shared. It's very insightful. And, it's been nice to catch up with you again.
Yeah, it's been great to catch up with you too, Jess, and thank you for sharing your wisdom and knowledge with the world too. And like I said, you know, we don't deserve and don't need to suffer in silence, and it takes a tremendous amount of courage to share your pain with the world, but it frees you and it frees the world to do the same. So good on you for doing what you do.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. That's a good word.
Thank you for listening to Awakening the Body and Mind podcast with Jessica Maguire. For more podcasts and to learn more, please visit jessicamaguire.com.